Well, thanks for the advice, Jace said. I can walk myself the rest of the way to the library. Jace. But Jace was already gone, leaving Alex's distress behind. Jace hated it when other people were worried on his behalf. It made him feel like maybe there really was something to worry about. The library door was half open. Not bothering to knock, Jace went in. It had always been one of his favorite rooms in the Institute. There was something comforting about its old-fashioned mix of wood and brass fittings, the leather and velvet-bound books ranged along the walls like old friends waiting for him to return. Now a blast of cold air hit him the moment the door swung open. The fire that usually blazed in the huge fireplace all through the fall and winter was a heap of ashes. The lamps had been switched off. The only light came through the narrow, louvered windows and the tower's skylight high above. Not wanting to, Jace thought of Hodge. If he were here, the fire would be lit. The gas lamps turned up, casting shaded pools of golden light onto the parquet floor. Hodge himself would be slouched in an armchair by the fire, Hugo on one shoulder, a book propped at his side. But there was someone in Hodge's old armchair. A thin gray someone, who rose from the armchair fluidly, uncoiling like a snake charmer's cobra, and turned toward him with a cool smile. It was a woman. She wore a long, old-fashioned dark gray cloak that fell to the tops of her boots. Beneath it was a fitted slate-colored suit with a mandarin collar, the stiff points of which pressed into her neck. Her hair was a sort of colorless, pale blonde, pulled tightly back with combs, and her eyes were flinty gray chips. Jace could feel them like the touch of freezing water as her gaze traveled from his filthy, mud-splattered jeans to his bruised face, to his eyes, and locked there. For a second something hot flickered in her gaze, like the glow of a flame trapped under ice. Then it vanished.
You are the boy.
Before Jace could reply, another voice answered. It was Maris, having come into the library behind him. He wondered why he hadn't heard her approaching and realized she had abandoned her heels for slippers. She wore a long robe of patterned silk and a thin-lipped expression. Yes, Inquisitor, she said. This is Jonathan Morgenstern. The Inquisitor moved toward Jace like drifting gray smoke. She stopped in front of him and held out a hand, long-fingered and white. It reminded him of an albino spider.
Look at me, boy, she said,
and suddenly those long fingers were under his chin, forcing his head up. She was incredibly strong.
You will call me Inquisitor. You will not call me anything else.
The skin around her eyes was mazed with fine lines like cracks in paint. Two narrow grooves ran from the edges of her mouth to her chin.
Do you understand?
For most of his life, the Inquisitor had been a distant, half-mythical figure to Jace. Her identity, even many of her duties, were shrouded in the secrecy of the Clave. He had always imagined she would be like the Silent Brothers, with their self-contained power and hidden mysteries. He had not imagined someone so direct, or so hostile. Her eyes seemed to cut at him, to slice away his armor of confidence and amusement, stripping him down to the bone.
My name is Jace, he said. Not boy. Jace Wayland. You have no right to the name of Wayland, she said. You are Jonathan Morgenstern. To claim the name of Wayland makes you a liar, just like your father.
Actually, said Jace, I prefer to think that I'm a liar in a way that's uniquely my own.
I see. A small smile curved her pale mouth. It was not a nice smile.
You are intolerant of authority, just as your father was, like the angel whose name you both bear.
Her fingers gripped his chin with a sudden ferocity, her nails digging in painfully.
Lucifer was rewarded for his rebellion when God cast him into the pits of hell.
Her breath was sour as vinegar.
If you defy my authority, I can promise that you will envy him his fate.
She released Jace and stepped back. He could feel the slow trickle of blood where her nails had cut his face. His hands shook with anger, but he refused to raise one to wipe the blood away.
Imogen, began Maris, then corrected herself. Inquisitor Herondale. He's agreed to a trial by the sword. You can find out whether he's telling the truth.
About his father? Yes, I know I can.
Inquisitor Herondale's stiff collar dug into her throat as she turned to look at Maeris.
You know, Maeris, the Clave is not pleased with you. You and Robert are the guardians of the Institute. You're just lucky your record over the years has been relatively clean. Few demonic disturbances until recently, and everything's been quiet the past few days. No reports, even from Idris. So the Clave is feeling lenient. We have sometimes wondered if you'd actually rescinded your allegiance to Valentine. As it is, he set a trap for you and you fell right into it. One might think you'd know better.
There was no trap, Jace cut in. My father knew the Lightwoods would raise me if they thought I was Michael Whalen's son, that's all.
The Inquisitor stared at him as if he were a talking cockroach. Do you know about the cuckoo bird, Jonathan Morgenstern?
Jace wondered if perhaps being the Inquisitor, it couldn't be a pleasant job, had left Imogen Herondale a little unhinged.
The what?
The cuckoo bird, she said. You see, cuckoos are parasites. They lay their eggs in other birds' nests. When the egg hatches, the baby cuckoo pushes the other baby birds out of the nest. The poor parent birds work themselves to death trying to find enough food to feed the enormous cuckoo child who has murdered their babies and taken their places.
Enormous? Said Jace. Did you just call me fat?
It was an analogy.
I am not fat.
And I, said Maeris, don't want your pity, Imogen. I refuse to believe the Clave will punish either myself or my husband for choosing to bring up the son of a dead friend.
She squared her shoulders. It isn't as if we didn't tell them what we were doing.
And I've never harmed any of the Lightwoods in any way, said Jace. I've worked hard and trained hard. Say whatever you want about my father, but he made a shadow hunter out of me. I've earned my place here.
Don't defend your father to me, the Inquisitor said. I knew him. He was, is, the vilest of men.
Vile? Who says vile? What does that even mean?
The Inquisitor's colorless lashes grazed her cheeks as she narrowed her eyes, her gaze speculative. You are arrogant, she said at last, as well as intolerant. Did your father teach you to behave this way?
Not to him, Jace said shortly.
Then you're aping him.
Valentine was one of the most arrogant and disrespectful men I've ever met.
I suppose he brought you up to be just like him.
Yes, Jace said, unable to help himself. I was trained to be an evil mastermind from a young age, pulling the wings off flies, poisoning the Earth's water supply. I was covering that stuff in kindergarten. I guess we're all just lucky my father faked his own death before he got to the raping and pillaging part of my education, or no one would be safe.
Maeris let out a sound much like a groan of horror.
Jace!
But the Inquisitor cut her off.
And just like your father, you can't keep your temper, she said. The Lightwoods have coddled you and let your worst qualities run rampant.
You may look like an angel, Jonathan Morgenstern, but I know exactly what you are.
He's just a boy, said Maeris.
Was she defending him? Jace looked at her quickly, but her eyes were averted.
Valentine was just a boy once. Now, before we do any digging around in that blonde head of yours to find out the truth, I suggest you cool your temper, and I know just where you can do that best.
Jace blinked. Are you sending me to my room?
I'm sending you to the prisons of the Silent City. After a night there, I suspect you'll be a great deal more cooperative.
Maeris gasped.
Imogen, you can't.
I certainly can. Her eyes gleamed like razors. Do you have anything to say to me, Jonathan?
Jace could only stare. There were levels and levels to the Silent City, and he had seen only the first two, where the archives were kept and where the brothers sat in council. The prison cells were at the very lowest level of the city, beneath the graveyard levels, where thousands of buried Shadowhunter dead rested in silence. The cells were reserved for the worst of criminals. Vampires gone rogue. Warlocks who broke the Covenant Law. Shadowhunters who spilled each other's blood. Jace was none of those things. How could she even suggest sending him there?
Very wise, Jonathan. I see you're already learning the best lesson the Silent City has to teach you.
The Inquisitor's smile was like a grinning skull's. How to keep your mouth shut.
Clary was in the middle of helping Luke clean up the remains of dinner when the doorbell rang again. She straightened up, her gaze flicking to Luke.
Expecting someone?
He frowned, drying his hands on the dish towel.
No. Wait here.
She saw him reach up to grab something off one of the shelves as he left the kitchen. Something that glinted.
Did you see that knife?
Simon whistled, standing up from the table.
Is he expecting trouble?
I think he's always expecting trouble, Clary said. These days. She peered around the side of the kitchen door, saw Luke at the open front door. She could hear his voice, but not what he was saying. He didn't sound upset, though.
Simon's hand on her shoulder pulled her back.
Keep away from the door. What, are you crazy? What if there's some demon thing out there?
Then Luke could probably use our help. She looked down at his hand on her shoulder, grinning.
Now you're all protective?
That's cute.
Clary! Luke called her from the front room. Come here. I want you to meet someone.
Clary patted Simon's hand and set it aside. Be right back. Luke was leaning against the doorframe, arms crossed. The knife in his hand had magically disappeared. A girl stood on the front steps of the house, a girl with curling brown hair and multiple braids and a tan corduroy jacket.
This is Maya, Luke said, who I was just telling you about.
The girl looked at Clary. Her eyes under the bright porch light were a strange amber green.
You must be Clary.
Clary admitted that this was the case.
So that kid, the boy with the blonde hair who tore up the Hunter's Moon, he's your brother?
Jace, Clary said shortly, not liking the girl's intrusive curiosity.
Maya?
It was Simon, coming up behind Clary, hands thrust into the pockets of his jean jacket.
Yeah, you're Simon, right? I suck at names, but I remember you.
The girl smiled past Clary at him.
Great, said Clary. Now we're all friends.
Luke coughed and straightened up. I wanted you to meet each other because Maya's going to be working around the bookshop for the next few weeks, he said. If you see her going in and out, don't worry about it. She's got a key.
And I'll keep an eye out for anything weird, Maya promised. Demons, vamps, whatever.
Thanks, said Clary. I feel so safe now.
Maya blinked. Are you being sarcastic?
We're all a little tense, Simon said. I, for one, am happy to know someone will be around here keeping an eye on my girlfriend when no one else is home.
Luke raised his eyebrows but said nothing. Clary said, Simon's right. Sorry I snapped at you.
It's all right. Maya looked sympathetic. I heard about your mom. I'm sorry.
Me too, Clary said, turned around and went back to the kitchen. She sat down at the table and put her face in her hands. A moment later, Luke followed her.
Sorry, he said. I guess you weren't in the mood to meet anyone.
Clary looked at him through splayed fingers. Where's Simon?
Talking to Maya, Luke said.
And indeed, Clary could hear their voices, soft as murmurs, from the other end of the house.
I just thought it would be good for you to have a friend right now.
I have Simon. Luke pushed his glasses back up his nose.
Did I hear him call you his girlfriend?
She almost laughed at his bewildered expression.
I guess so.
Is that something new, or is this something I'm already supposed to know but forgot?
I hadn't heard it before myself. She took her hands away from her face and looked at them. She thought of the rune, the open eye, that decorated the back of the right hand of every shadow hunter.
Somebody's girlfriend, she said. Somebody's sister, somebody's daughter. All these things I never knew I was before, and I still don't really know what I am.
Isn't that always the question? Luke said.
And Clary heard the door shut at the other end of the house, and Simon's footsteps approaching the kitchen. The smell of cold night air came in with him.
Would it be okay if I crashed here tonight? He asked. It's a little late to head home. You know you're always welcome.
Luke glanced at his watch.
I'm going to get some sleep. Have to be up at 5 a.m. to get to the hospital by 6.
Why 6? Simon asked, after Luke had left the kitchen.
That's when hospital visiting hours start, Clary said. You don't have to sleep on the couch. Not if you don't want to.
I don't mind staying to keep you company tomorrow, he said, shaking dark hair out of his eyes impatiently.
Not at all.
I know. I meant you don't have to sleep on the couch if you don't want to.
Well, then where?
His voice trailed off, eyes wide behind his glasses.
Oh.
It's a double bed, she said. In the guest room? Simon took his hands out of his pockets. There was bright color in his cheeks. Jace would have tried to look cool. Simon didn't even try.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. He came across the kitchen to her, and bending down, kissed her lightly and clumsily on the mouth. Smiling, she got to her feet.
Enough with the kitchens, she said. No more kitchens.
And taking him firmly by the wrists, she pulled him after her, out of the kitchen, toward the guest room where she slept.
Chapter 5. Sins of the Fathers. The darkness of the prisons of the Silent City was more profound than any darkness Jace had ever known. He couldn't see the shape of his own hand in front of his eyes, couldn't see the floor or ceiling of his cell. What he knew of the cell, he knew from the torch-lit first glimpse he'd had, guided down here by a contingent of Silent Brothers, who had opened the barred gate of the cell for him and ushered him inside as if he were a common criminal. Then again, that's probably exactly what they thought he was. He knew that the cell had a flagged stone floor, that three of the walls were hewn rock, and that the fourth was made of narrowly spaced electrum bars, each end sunk deeply into stone. He knew there was a door set into those bars. He also knew that a long metal bar ran along the east wall, because the Silent Brothers had attached one loop of a pair of silver cuffs to this bar, and the other cuff to his wrist. He could walk up and down the cell a few steps, rattling like Marley's ghost, but that was as far as he could go. He had already rubbed his right wrist raw, yanking thoughtlessly at the cuff. At least he was left-handed, a small bright spot in the impenetrable blackness. Not that it mattered much, but it was reassuring to have his better fighting hand free. He began another slow promenade along the length of his cell, trailing his fingers along the wall as he walked. It was unnerving not to know what time it was. In Idris, his father had taught him to tell time by the angle of the sun, the length of afternoon shadows, the position of the stars in the night sky. But there were no stars here. In fact, he had begun to wonder if he would ever see the sky again.
Jace paused. Now why had he wondered that? Of course he'd see the sky again. The Clave weren't going to kill him. The penalty of death was reserved for murderers. But the flutter of fear stayed with him, just under his ribcage, strange as an unexpected twinge of pain. Jace wasn't exactly prone to random fits of panic. Alec would have said he could have benefited from a bit more in the way of constructive cowardice. Fear wasn't something that had ever affected him much. He thought of Mayra saying, "You were never afraid of the dark." It was true. This anxiety was unnatural, not like him at all. There had to be more to it than simple darkness. He took another shallow breath. He just had to get through the night. One night, that was it. He took another step forward, his manacle jingling drearily. A sound split the air, freezing him in his tracks. It was a high, howling ululation, a sound of pure and mindless terror. It seemed to go on and on like a singing note plucked from a violin, growing higher and thinner and sharper until it was abruptly cut off. Jace swore. His ears were ringing, and he could taste terror in his mouth like bitter metal. Who would have thought that fear had a taste? He pressed his back against the wall of the cell,
willing himself to calm down. The sound came again, louder this time, and then there was another scream, and another. Something crashed overhead, and Jace ducked involuntarily, before remembering that he was several levels below ground. He heard another crash, and a picture formed in his mind. Mausoleum doors smashing open, the corpses of centuries-dead shadow hunters staggering free. Nothing more than skeletons held together by dried tendon, dragging themselves across the white floors of the silent city with fleshless, bony fingers. Enough! With a gasp of effort, Jace forced the vision away. The dead did not come back. And besides, they were the corpses of Nephilim like him, his slain brothers and sisters. He had nothing to fear from them now. So why was he so afraid? He clenched his hands into fists, nails digging into his palms. This panic was unworthy of him. He would master it. He would crush it down. He took a deep breath, filling his lungs, just as another scream sounded, this one very loud. The breath rasped out of his chest as something crashed loudly, very close to him, and he saw a sudden bloom of light, a hot fire flower stabbing into his eyes. Brother Jeremiah staggered into view, his right hand clutching a still-burning torch, his parchment hood fallen back to reveal a face torqued into a grotesque expression of terror. His previously sewn-shut mouth gaped open in a soundless scream, the gory threads of torn stitches dangling from his shredded lips. Blood, black in the torchlight, spattered his light robes. He took a few staggering steps forward, his hands outstretched, and then, as Jace watched in utter disbelief, Jeremiah pitched forward and fell headlong to the floor. Jace heard the shatter of bones as the archivist's body struck the ground and the torch sputtered, rolling out of Jeremiah's hand and toward the shallow stone gutter cut into the floor just outside the barred cell door. Jace went to his knees instantly, stretching as far as the chain would let him, his fingers reaching for the torch. He couldn't quite touch it. The light was fading rapidly, but by its waning glow he could see Jeremiah's dead face turned toward him, blood still leaking from his open mouth. His teeth were gnarled black stubs. Jace's chest felt as if something heavy were pressed against it. The silent brothers never opened their mouths, never spoke or laughed or screamed. But that had been the sound Jace had heard. He was sure of it now. The screams of men who hadn't cried out in half a century. The sound of a terror more profound and powerful than the ancient rune of silence. But how could that be? And where were the other brothers? Jace wanted to scream for help, but the weight was still on his chest, pressing down. He couldn't seem to get enough air. He lunged for the torch again and felt one of the small bones in his wrist shatter. Pain shot up his arm, but it gave him the extra inch he needed. He swept the torch into his hand and rose to his feet. As the flame leaped back into life, he heard another noise. A thick noise. A sort of ugly, dragging slither. The hair on the back of his neck stood up, sharp as needles. He thrust the torch forward, his shaking hand sending wild flicks of light dancing across the walls, brilliantly illuminating the shadows. There was nothing there. Instead of relief, though, he felt his terror intensify. He was now gasping in air in great sucking draughts, as if he'd been underwater. The fear was all the worse because it was so unfamiliar. What had happened to him? Had he suddenly become a coward? He jerked hard against the manacle, hoping the pain would clear his head. It didn't. He heard the noise again, the thumping slither, and now it was close. There was another sound, too, behind the slither, a soft, constant whispering. He had never heard any sound quite so evil. Half out of his mind with horror, he staggered back against the wall and raised the torch in his wildly jerking hand. For a moment, bright as daylight, he saw the whole room, the cell, the barred door, the bare flagstones beyond, and the dead body of Jeremiah huddled against the floor. There was a door just behind Jeremiah. It was opening slowly. Something heaved its way through the door. Something huge and dark and formless. Eyes like burning ice, sunk deep into dark folds, regarded Jace with a snarling amusement. Then the thing lunged forward. A great cloud of roiling vapor rose up in front of Jace's eyes like a wave sweeping across the surface of the ocean. The last thing he saw was the flame of his torch guttering green and blue before it was swallowed up by the darkness. Kissing Simon was pleasant. It was a gentle sort of pleasant, like lying in a hammock on a summer day with a book and a glass of lemonade. It was the sort of thing you could keep doing and not feel bored or apprehensive or disconcerted or bothered by much of anything, except the fact that the metal bar on the sofa bed was digging into your back. "Ouch," Clary said, trying to wriggle away from the bar and not succeeding. "Did I hurt you?" Simon raised himself up on his side, looking concerned. Or maybe it was just that without his glasses, his eyes seemed twice as large and dark. "No, not you. The bed, it's like a torture instrument." "I didn't notice," he said somberly, as she grabbed a pillow from the floor where it had fallen and wedged it underneath them. "You wouldn't," she laughed. "Where were we?" "Well, my face was approximately where it is now, but your face was a lot closer to mine. That's what I remember, anyway." "How romantic." She pulled him down on top of her, where he balanced on his elbows. Their bodies lay neatly aligned, and she could feel the beat of his heart through both their t-shirts. His lashes, normally hidden behind his glasses, brushed her cheek when he leaned to kiss her. She let out a shaky little laugh. "Is this weird for you?" she whispered.
"No. I think when you imagine something often enough, the reality of it seems..."
"Anticlimactic?"
"No."
Simon pulled back, looking at her with nearsighted conviction.
"Don't ever think that. This is the opposite of anticlimactic. It's..."
Suppressed giggles bubbled up in her chest. "Okay, maybe you don't want to say that either." He half closed his eyes, his mouth curving into a smile.
"Okay, now I want to say something smart-ass back at you, but all I can think is..."
She grinned up at him. "That you want sex?"
"Stop that."
He caught her hands with his, pinned them to the bedspread, and looked down at her gravely.
"That I love you."
"So you don't want sex?" He let go of her hands.
"I didn't say that."
She laughed and pushed at his chest with both hands. "Let me up." He looked alarmed.
"I didn't mean I only want sex."
"It's not that. I want to change into my pajamas. I can't take making out seriously when I still have my socks on." He watched her mournfully while she gathered up her pajamas from the dresser and headed into the bathroom. Pulling the door closed, she made a face at him. "I'll be right back." Whatever he said in response was lost as she shut the door. She brushed her teeth and then ran the water in the sink for a long time, staring at herself in the medicine cabinet mirror. Her hair was tousled, and her cheeks were red. Did that count as glowing? She wondered. People in love were supposed to glow, weren't they? Or maybe that was just pregnant women. She couldn't remember exactly, but surely she was supposed to look a little different. After all, this was the first real long kissing session she'd ever had. And it was nice, she told herself. Safe and pleasant and comfortable. Of course, she'd kissed Jace on the night of her birthday, and that hadn't been safe and comfortable and pleasant at all. It had been like opening up a vein of something unknown inside her body, something hotter and sweeter and bitterer than blood. "Don't think about Jace," she told herself fiercely. But looking at herself in the mirror, she saw her eyes darken and knew her body remembered even if her mind didn't want to. She ran the water cold and splashed it over her face before reaching for her pajamas. Great, she realized. She brought her pajama bottoms in with her, but not the top. However much Simon might appreciate it, it seemed early to break out the topless sleeping arrangements. She went back into the bedroom, only to discover that Simon was asleep in the center of the bed, clutching the bolster pillow as if it were a human being. She stifled a laugh. "Simon?" she whispered. Then she heard the sharp two-tone beep that signaled that a text message had just arrived on her cell phone. The phone itself was lying folded on the bedside table. Clary picked it up and saw that the message was from Isabel. She flipped the phone open and scrolled hastily down to the text. She read it twice, just to make sure she wasn't imagining things. Then she ran to the closet to get her coat.
"Jonathan."
The voice spoke out of the blackness, slow, dark, familiar as pain. Jace blinked his eyes open and saw only darkness. He shivered. He was lying curled on the icy flagstone floor. He must have fainted. He felt a stab of fury at his own weakness, his own frailty. He rolled onto his side, his torn wrist throbbing in its manacle. "Is anyone there?"
"Surely you recognize your own father, Jonathan."
The voice came again, and Jace did know it. Its sound of old iron, its smooth, near tonelessness. He tried to scramble to his feet, but his boots slipped on a puddle of something and he skidded backward, his shoulders hitting the stone wall hard. His chain rattled like a chorus of steel wind chimes.
"Are you hurt?"
A light blazed upward, searing Jace's eyes. He blinked away burning tears and saw Valentine standing on the other side of the bars beside the corpse of Brother Jeremiah. A glowing witchlight stone in one hand cast a sharp whitish glow over the room. Jace could see the stains of old blood on the walls, and newer blood, a small lake of it, which had spilled from Jeremiah's open mouth. He felt his stomach roil and clench, and thought of the black formless shape he'd seen before with eyes like burning jewels. "That thing," he choked out. "Where is it? What was it?"
"You are hurt."
Valentine moved closer to the bars.
"Who ordered you locked up here? Was it the Clave? The Lightwoods?"
"It was the Inquisitor." Jace looked down at himself. There was more blood on his pants legs and on his shirt. He couldn't tell if any of it was his. Blood was seeping slowly from beneath his manacle. Valentine regarded him thoughtfully through the bars. It was the first time in years Jace had seen his father in real battle dress, the thick leather shadow hunter clothes that allowed freedom of movement while protecting the skin from most kinds of demon venom, the electrum-plated braces on his arms and legs, each marked with a series of glyphs and runes. There was a wide strap across his chest, and the hilt of a sword gleamed above his shoulder. He squatted down then, putting his cool black eyes on a level with Jace's. Jace was surprised to see no anger in them.
"The Inquisitor and the Clave are one and the same. And the Lightwoods should never have allowed this to happen. I would never have let anyone do this to you."
Jace pressed his shoulders back against the wall. It was as far as his chain would let him get from his father.
"Did you come down here to kill me?" "Kill you? Why would I want to kill you?"
"Well, why did you kill Jeremiah? And don't bother feeding me some story about how you just happened to wander along after he spontaneously died. I know you did this."
For the first time, Valentine glanced down at the body of Brother Jeremiah.
"I did kill him. And the rest of the Silent Brothers as well. I had to. They had something I needed."
"What? A sense of decency?"
"This," said Valentine,
and drew the sword from his shoulder sheath in one swift movement.
"Melartek."
Jace choked back the gasp of surprise that rose in his throat. He recognized it well enough. The huge, heavy-bladed silver sword with the hilt in the shape of outspread wings was the one that hung above the speaking stars in the Silent Brothers' council room.
"You took the Silent Brothers' sword?"
"It was never theirs," Valentine said. "It belongs to all Nephilim. This is the blade with which the angel drove Adam and Eve out of the garden. And he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword which turned every way," he quoted, gazing down at the blade.
Jace licked his dry lips.
What are you going to do with it?
I'll tell you that, said Valentine, when I think I can trust you. And I know that you trust me.
Trust you? After the way you sneaked through the portal at Renwick's and smashed it so I couldn't come after you? And the way you tried to kill Clary?
I would never have hurt your sister, said Valentine with a flash of anger, any more than I would hurt you.
All you've ever done is hurt me. It was the Lightwoods who protected me.
I'm not the one who locked you up here. I'm not the one who threatens and distrusts you. That's the Lightwoods and their friends in the Clave.
Valentine paused.
Seeing you like this, how they've treated you, and yet you remain stoic. I'm proud of you.
At that, Jace looked up in surprise, so quickly that he felt a wave of dizziness. His hand gave an insistent throb. He pushed the pain down and back until his breathing eased.
What? I realize now what I did wrong at Renwick's, Valentine went on. I was picturing you as the little boy I left behind in Idris, obedient to my every wish. Instead, I found a headstrong young man, independent and courageous. Yet I treated you as if you were still a child. No wonder you rebelled against me.
Rebelled? I... Jace's throat tightened, cutting off the words he wanted to say. His heart had begun pounding in rhythm with the throbbing in his hand. Valentine pressed on.
I never had a chance to explain my past to you, to tell you why I've done the things I've done.
There's nothing to explain. You killed my grandparents. You held my mother prisoner. You slew other shadow hunters to further your own ends. Every word in Jace's mouth tasted like poison.
You only know half the facts, Jonathan. I lied to you when you were a child because you were too young to understand. Now you are old enough to be told the truth.
So tell me the truth. Valentine reached through the bars of the cell and laid his hand on top of Jace's. The rough, calloused texture of his fingers felt exactly the way it had when Jace had been 10 years old.
I want to trust you, Jonathan, he said. Can I?
Jace wanted to reply, but the words wouldn't come. His chest felt as if an iron band was being slowly tightened around it, cutting off his breath by inches.
I wish, he whispered.
A noise sounded above them, a noise like the clang of a metal door. Then Jace heard footsteps, whispers echoing off the city's stone walls. Valentine started to his feet, closing his hand over the witchlight until it was only a dim glow and he himself was a faintly outlined shadow.
Quicker than I thought, he murmured, and looked down at Jace through the bars.
Jace looked past him, but he could see nothing but blackness beyond the faint illumination of the witchlight. He thought of the roiling dark form he had seen before, crushing out all light before it.
What's coming? What is it? He demanded, scrabbling forward on his knees. I must go, said Valentine. But we're not done, you and I.
Jace put his hand to the bars.
Unchain me. Whatever it is, I want to be able to fight it. Unchaining you would hardly be a kindness now.
Valentine closed his hand around the witchlight stone completely. It winked out, plunging the room into darkness. Jace flung himself against the bars of the cell, his broken hand screaming its protest in pain.
No, he shouted. Father, please! When you want to find me, Valentine said, you will find me.
And then there was only the sound of his footsteps rapidly receding and Jace's own ragged breathing as he slumped against the bars. On the subway ride uptown, Clary found herself unable to sit down. She paced up and down the near-empty train car, her iPod headphones dangling around her neck. Isabel hadn't picked up the phone when Clary had called, and an irrational sense of worry gnawed at Clary's insides. She thought of Jace at the Hunter's Moon covered in blood. With his teeth bared in snarling anger, he'd looked more like a werewolf himself than a shadow hunter charged with protecting humans and keeping downworlders in line. She charged up the stairs at the 96th Street subway stop, only slowing to a walk as she approached the corner where the Institute hulked like a huge gray shadow. It had been hot down in the tunnels,
and the sweat on the back of her neck was prickling coldly as she made her way up the cracked concrete walk to the Institute's front door. She reached for the enormous iron bell pole that hung from the architrave, then hesitated. She was a shadow hunter, wasn't she? She had a right to be in the Institute, just as much as the Lightwoods did. With a surge of resolve, she seized the door handle, trying to remember the words Jace had spoken. In the name of the angel, I... The door swung open onto a darkness starred by the flames of dozens of tiny candles. As she hurried between the pews, the candles flickered as if they were laughing at her. She reached the elevator and clanged the metal door shut behind her, stabbing at the buttons with a shaking finger. She willed her nervousness to subside. Was she worried about Jace, she wondered, or just worried about seeing Jace? Her face, framed by the upturned collar of her coat, looked very white and small, her eyes big and dark green, her lips pale and bitten. Not pretty at all, she thought in dismay, and forced the thought back. What did it matter how she looked? Jace didn't care. Jace couldn't care. The elevator came to a clanging stop, and Clary pushed the door open. Church was waiting for her in the foyer. He greeted her with a disgruntled meow. What's wrong, Church? Her voice sounded unnaturally loud in the quiet room. She wondered if anyone were here in the Institute. Maybe it was just her. The thought gave her the creeps. Is anyone home? The blue Persian turned his back and headed down the corridor. They passed the music room and the library, both empty, before Church turned another corner and sat down in front of a closed door. Right then. Here we are, his expression seemed to say. Before she could knock, the door opened, revealing Isabel standing on the threshold, barefoot in a pair of jeans and a soft violet sweater. She started when she saw Clary. I thought I heard someone coming down the hall, but I didn't think it would be you, she said. What are you doing here? Clary stared at her. You sent me that text message. You said the Inquisitor threw Jace in jail. Clary! Isabel glanced up and down the corridor, then bit her lip. I didn't mean you should race down here right now. Clary was horrified. Isabel? Jail? Yes, but... With a defeated sigh, Isabel stood aside, gesturing for Clary to enter her room. Look, you might as well come in. And shoo you, she said, waving a hand at Church. Go guard the elevator. Church gave her a horrified look, lay down on his stomach, and went to sleep. Cats, Isabel muttered and slammed the door. Hey, Clary. Alec was sitting on Isabel's unmade bed, his booted feet dangling over the side. What are you doing here? Clary sat down on the padded stool in front of Isabel's gloriously messy vanity table. Isabel texted me. She told me what happened to Jace. Isabel and Alec exchanged a meaningful look. Oh, come on, Alec, Isabel said. I thought she should know. I didn't know she'd come racing up here. Clary's stomach lurched. Of course I came. Is he all right? Why on earth did the Inquisitor throw him in prison? It's not prison exactly. He's in the Silent City, said Alec, sitting up straight and pulling one of Isabel's pillows across his lap. He picked idly at the beaded fringe sewed to its edges. In the Silent City? Why? Alec hesitated. There are cells under the Silent City. They keep criminals there sometimes before deporting them to Idris to stand trial before the Council. People who've done really bad things. Murderers, renegade vampires, shadow hunters who break the Accords. That's where Jace is now.
Locked up with a bunch of murderers?
Clary was on her feet, outraged.
What's wrong with you people? Why aren't you more upset?
Alec and Isabel exchanged another look.
It's just for a night, Isabel said. And there isn't anyone else down there with him, we asked.
But why? What did Jace do? He mouthed off to the Inquisitor. That was it, as far as I know, said Alec. Isabel perched herself on the edge of the vanity table.
It's unbelievable.
Then the Inquisitor must be insane, said Clary. She's not, actually, said Alec. If Jace were in your mundane army, do you think he'd be allowed to mouth off to his superiors?
Absolutely not.
Well, not during a war, but Jace isn't a soldier.
But we're all soldiers. Jace as much as the rest of us. There's a hierarchy of command, and the Inquisitor is near the top. Jace is near the bottom. He should have treated her with more respect.
If you agree that he ought to be in jail, why did you ask me to come here? Just to get me to agree with you? I don't see the point. What do you want me to do? We didn't say he should be in jail, Isabel snapped. Just that he shouldn't have talked back to one of the highest-ranked members of the Clave. Besides, she added in a smaller voice, I thought that maybe you could help.
Help? How?
I told you before, Alex said. Half the time it seems like Jace is trying to get himself killed. He has to learn to look out for himself, and that includes cooperating with the Inquisitor.
And you think I can help you make him do that? Clary said, disbelief coloring her voice. I'm not sure anyone can make Jace do anything, said Isabel. But I think you can remind him that he has something to live for.
Alec looked down at the pillow in his hand and gave a sudden savage yank to the fringe. Beads rattled down onto Isabel's blanket like a shower of localized rain. Isabel frowned.
Alec, don't.
Clary wanted to tell Isabel that they were Jace's family, that she wasn't, that their voices carried more weight with him than hers ever would. But she kept hearing Jace's voice in her head saying, I never felt like I belonged anywhere, but you make me feel like I belong.
Can we go to the Silent City and see him?
Will you tell him to cooperate with the Inquisitor? Alec demanded.
Clary considered. I want to hear what he has to say first.
Alec dropped the denuded pillow onto the bed and stood up frowning. Before he could say anything, there was a knock at the door. Isabel unhitched herself from the vanity table and went to answer it. It was a small, dark-haired boy, his eyes half-hidden by glasses. He wore jeans and an oversized sweatshirt, and carried a book in one hand.
Max, Isabel said with some surprise. I thought you were asleep.
I was in the weapons room, said the boy, who had to be the Lightwood's youngest son. But there were noises coming from the library. I think someone might be trying to contact the Institute. He peered around Isabel at Clary.
Who's that?
That's Clary, said Alec. She's Jace's sister. Max's eyes rounded.
I thought Jace didn't have any brothers or sisters.
That's what we all thought, said Alec, picking up the sweater he'd left draped over one of Isabel's chairs and yanking it on. His hair rayed out around his head like a soft dark halo, crackling with static electricity. He pushed it back impatiently. I'd better get to the library.
We'll both go, Isabel said, taking her gold whip, which was twisted into a shimmering rope out of a drawer and sliding the handle through her belt. Maybe something's happened.
Where are your parents? Clary asked.
They got called out a few hours ago. A fae was murdered in Central Park. The Inquisitor went with them, Alec explained.
You didn't want to go?
We weren't invited.
Isabel looped her two dark braids up on top of her head and stuck the coil of hair through with a small glass dagger.
Look after Max, will you? We'll be right back.
But, Clary protested,
we'll be right back.
Isabel darted out into the corridor, Alec on her heels. The moment the door shut behind them, Clary sat down on the bed and regarded Max with apprehension. She'd never spent much time around children. Her mother had never let her babysit. And she wasn't really sure how to talk to them or what might amuse them. It helped a little that this particular little boy reminded her of Simon at that age, with his skinny arms and legs and glasses that seemed too big for his face. Max returned her stare with a considering glance of his own, not shy, but thoughtful and contained.
How old are you? He said finally.
Clary was taken aback.
How old do I look?
14.
I'm 16, but people always think I'm younger than I am because I'm so short.
Max nodded.
Me too, he said. I'm 9, but people always think I'm 7.
You look 9 to me, said Clary. What's that you're holding? Is it a book?
Max brought his hand out from behind his back. He was holding a wide, flat paperback about the size of one of those small magazines they sold at grocery store counters. This one had a brightly colored cover with the Japanese kanji script on it under the English words. Clary laughed.
Naruto, she said,
I didn't know you liked manga. Where did you get that?
In the airport. I like the pictures, but I can't figure out how to read it.
Here, give it to me. She flipped it open, showing him the pages. You read it backward, right to left instead of left to right, and you read each page clockwise. Do you know what that means?
Of course, said Max.
For a moment, Clary was worried she'd annoyed him. He seemed pleased enough, though, when he took the book back and flipped to the last page. This one is number 9, he said. I think I should get the other 8 before I read it. That's a good idea. Maybe you can get someone to take you to Midtown Comics or Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet?
Max looked bemused, but before Clary could explain, Isabel burst through the door, clearly out of breath.
It was someone trying to contact the Institute, she said, before Clary could ask. One of the Silent Brothers. Something's happened in the Bone City.
What kind of something?
I don't know. I've never heard of the Silent Brothers asking for help before.
Isabel was clearly distressed. She turned to her brother.
Max, go to your room and stay there, okay?
Max set his jaw. Are you and Alec going out?
Yes.
To the Silent City?
Max!
I want to come. Isabel shook her head. The hilt of the dagger at the back of her head glittered like a point of fire.
Absolutely not. You're too young.
You're not 18 either.
Isabel turned to Clary with a look half of anxiety and half of desperation.
Clary, come here for a second, please.
Clary got up, wonderingly, and Isabel grabbed her by the arm and yanked her out of the room, slamming the door shut behind her. There was a thump as Max threw himself against it.
Damn it, said Isabel, holding the knob. Can you grab my stele for me, please? It's in my pocket.
Hastily, Clary held up the stele Luke had given her earlier that night.
Use mine.
With a few swift strokes, Isabel had carved a locking rune onto the door. Clary could still hear Max's protest from the other side as Isabel stepped away from the door, grimacing, and handed Clary back her stele.
I didn't know you had one of these.
It was my mother's, said Clary. Then she mentally chided herself. Is my mother's. It is my mother's.
Huh.
Isabel thumped on the door with a closed fist.
Max, there's some power bars in the nightstand drawer if you get hungry. We'll be back as soon as we can.
There was another outraged yell from behind the door. With a shrug, Isabel turned and hurried back down the hallway, Clary at her side.
What did the message say? Clary demanded.
Just that there was trouble?
That there was an attack. That's it.
Alec was waiting for them outside the library. He was wearing black leather Shadowhunter armor over his clothes. Gauntlets protected his arms, and marks circled his throat and wrists. Seraph blades, each one named for an angel, gleamed at the belt around his waist. Are you ready? He said to his sister. Is Max taken care of? He's fine, she held out her arms. Mark me. As Alec traced the patterns of runes along the backs of Isabel's hands and the insides of her wrists, he glanced over at Clary. You should probably head home, he said. You don't want to be here by yourself when the Inquisitor gets back.
I want to go with you, Clary said, the words spilling out before she could stop them.
Isabel took one of her hands back from Alec and blew on the marked skin as if she were cooling a too hot cup of coffee.
You sound like Max.
Max is 9. I'm the same age as you.
But you haven't got any training, Alec argued. You'll just be a liability.
No, I won't. Has either of you ever been inside the Silent City? Clary demanded.
I have. I know how to get in. I know how to find my way around.
Alec straightened up, putting his stele away.
I don't think...
Isabel cut in. She has a point, actually. I think she should come if she wants. Alec looked taken aback.
Last time we faced a demon, she just cowered and screamed. Seeing Clary's acid glare, he shot her an apologetic glance.
I'm sorry, but it's true.
I think she needs a chance to learn, Isabel said.
You know what Jace always says? Sometimes you don't have to search out danger. Sometimes danger finds you.
You can't lock me up like you did Max, Clary added, seeing Alec's weakening resolution. I'm not a child, and I know where the Bone City is. I can find my way there without you.
Alec turned away,
shaking his head and muttering something about girls. Isabel held out a hand to Clary. "Give me your stele," she said. "It's time you got some marks."
Chapter 6 City of Ashes. In the end, Isabel gave Clary only two marks, one on the back of each hand. One was the open eye that decorated the hand of every shadow hunter. The other was like two crossed sickles. Isabel said it was a rune of protection. Both runes burned when the stele first touched skin, but the pain faded as Clary, Isabel, and Alec headed downtown in a black gypsy cab. By the time they reached Second Avenue and stepped out into the pavement, Clary's hands and arms felt as light as if she were wearing water wings in a swimming pool. The three of them were silent as they passed under the wrought iron arch and into the marble cemetery. The last time Clary had been in this small courtyard, she had been hurrying along after Brother Jeremiah. Now, for the first time, she noticed the names carved into the walls. Youngblood, Fairchild, Thrushcross, Nightwine, Ravenscar. There were runes beside them. In Shadowhunter culture, each family had their own symbol. The Waylands was a blacksmith's hammer, the Lightwoods a torch, and Valentine's a star. The grass grew tangled over the feet of the angel statue in the courtyard center. The angel's eyes were closed, his slim hands closed over the stem of a stone goblet, a reproduction of the mortal cup. His stone face was impassive, streaked with dirt and grime. Clary said, "Last time I was here, Brother Jeremiah used a rune on the statue to open the door to the city." "I wouldn't want to use one of the Silent Brothers' runes," Alec said. His face was grim. "They should have sensed our presence before we got this far. Now I'm starting to worry." He took a dagger from his belt and drew the blade of it across his bare palm. Blood welled from the shallow gash. Making a fist over the stone cup, he let the blood drip into it. "Blood of the Nephilim," he said. "It should work as a key." The stone angel's eyelids flew open. For a moment, Clary almost expected to see eyes glaring at her from between the folds of stone, but there was only more granite. A second later, the grass at the angel's feet began to split. A crooked black line, rippling like the back of a snake, curved away from the statue, and Clary jumped back hastily as a dark hole opened at her feet. She peered down into it. Stairs led away into shadow. Last time she had been here, the darkness had been lit at intervals by torches, illuminating the steps. Now there was only blackness. "Something's wrong," Clary said. Neither Isabel nor Alec seemed inclined to argue. Clary took the witchlight stone Jace had given her out of her pocket and raised it overhead. Light burst from it, raying out through her spread fingers. "Let's go." Alec stepped in front of her. "I'll go first, then you follow me. Isabel, bring up the rear." They clambered down slowly, Clary's damp boots slipping on the age-rounded steps. At the foot of the stairs was a short tunnel that opened out into an enormous hall, a stone orchard of white arches inset with semi-precious stones. Rows of mausoleums huddled in the shadows like toadstool houses in a fairy story. The more distant of them disappeared into shadow. The witchlight was not strong enough to light the whole hall. Alec looked somberly down the rows. "I never thought I would enter the Silent City," he said. "Not even in death." "I wouldn't sound so sad about it," Clary said. "Brother Jeremiah told me what they do to your dead. They burn them up and use most of the ashes to make the city's marble. The blood and bone of demon slayers is itself a powerful protection against evil. Even in death, the clave serves the cause."
"Humph," said Isabel. "It's considered an honor. Besides, it's not like you Mundies don't burn your dead."
That doesn't make it not creepy, Clary thought.
The smell of ashes and smoke hung heavy on the air, familiar to her from the last time she was here. But there was something else underlying those smells. A heavier, thicker stench like rotting fruit. Frowning as he smelled it too, Alec took one of his angel blades out of his weapons belt. "Erythiel," he whispered.
and its glow joined the illumination of Clary's witchlight as they found the second staircase and descended into even denser gloom. The witchlight pulsed in Clary's hand like